Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Michael Dara McCauley, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks very much. We're straight in. Hi, Brendan, how are you?
Hi, yeah, we're straight down to it. And look, you're, of course, Dublin football legend, 8 All-Ireland medals under your belt. Since that, you've had an interesting kind of trajectory working in community sports in Dublin's inner city. You did teaching yoga, among other things, and you're now with the Sanctuary Runners, and we'll get to all that. But you've also chosen for us 5 songs that have meant something special to you throughout your life. So I think this is the first time in this slot that someone has picked Tupac Shakur. So what does this song bring you back to?
Well, I suppose, look, I was actually like very heavily influenced by my primary school teachers, which is probably why I went back to be a primary school teacher. And the first, there was a basketball put into my hand when I was 5 years old, and I rarely left. It was in my hand at 9:30 last night playing a match. And so I was kind of obsessed. So my bedroom as a kid was just full of basketball posters, Michael Jordan mainly, all over the walls. And I suppose what just came naturally off that was the hip hop kind of connection. And I was kind of just pretty obsessed with black culture as a kid. So I kind of like distinctly remember like just going to school, just rapping Tupac as a 10-year-old, which now when I like was a primary school teacher and I used to teach 10-year-olds, I probably don't know if I'd approve of them rapping Tupac. But I had my Disc Man, which were terrible because you couldn't move them at all. And I had a broken headphone, which I had to like sellotape together. But that was like, yeah, that was a kind of big part of it.
Were some of your friends into this as well, or were you kind of on your own?
On my own in the corner, just rapping a Tupac. I suppose people in the basketball world were, and I was like, some schools are rugby schools, some schools are football schools. Like our school was a basketball school, it still is. Yeah. Ballyroan boys, and so I suppose I probably wasn't alone. It's been a kind of big part of fucking Tupac tattoos at this stage.
Really?
I got that with one of my friends, Kate, as well. I remember I was talking to Kate about it. We actually got the same tattoo, which my girlfriend actually drew. But she was going out with one of the Dublin players, and I'd been on holidays with her, and we kind of hadn't really connected overly well. And then I spotted her one night rapping Hit Him Up on a night out, and I was like, wait a minute, we need to have a conversation. So it's always been a kind of a big part of it. Yeah.
What other tattoos do you have?
I have a couple of music ones. Yeah, I have a good few, to be honest. But I have a Sinead O'Connor thing. I have a, that's more for her kind of rebellious spirit, which I kind of admire and are kind of speaking out. And then I have some other, kind of some J. Cole tattoos. I have my mum and my dad and my dog and my all sorts on me, and I have a few bits and pieces. So
Did you rap with Ice Cube once?
This is no, Ice Cube backed me into a corner rapping Check Yourself, which was the highlight of my life. It's a serious name drop, I know, but I was in a room with Kevin Hart and Ice Cube, and I brought a speaker with me. I don't know why I did, but I brought it, and then I basically played it in the corner. We're in the background of Google. I don't know why I was there, right? But I played it, the famous intro to Check Yourself, da da da. Yeah. And then I turned it on, and Ice Cube like put on this like gangster face, and he was like I was like, oh shit, I don't want to piss off Ice Cube. And I turned it off straight away, and then Kevin Hart, which he was beautiful at like breaking any kind of awkwardness, was like, yo man, turn that shit back on. He's like, I wrote that shit when I was 17, and then, so I put it back on, and then Ice Cube seemed in better form, and then he like backed me into a corner like pointing at my chest going, you better check yourself before you wreck yourself, get them bad for your health. That was a gas little moment.
And why this song in particular, Dear Mama?
I suppose it's always had a huge meaning to me. My mom passed away when I was 12, nearly when I was in the height of my kind of Tupac phase, which was a kind of a weird time. I didn't know how to deal with it, basically. I always felt like such a baby in a grown up world at that stage, and have these like vivid image of like all these adults like shaking my hand at funerals and stuff, and just going, what was going on here? It just felt like I just shouldn't have been there. And I suppose I was never able to kind of contextualize it or vocalize it, or like I just kind of got my head down and went down with it. And although this song isn't a love letter to his mom who was passed away at the time, she was alive. I think Feeney's still alive. I think it just kind of for me, it kind of helped put some words around something that I wasn't able to do. There's a similar song that Nas has called "Dance" as well, but that kind of helped me. But when this was released around that time, it always took on a special meaning to me.
Yeah, amazing what music can do, isn't it? Okay, here's Michael Darren McCauley's first choice today. This is Tupac Shakur and "Dear Mama." When I was sick as a little kid, to keep me happy, there's no limit to the things you did. And all my childhood memories are full of all the sweet things you did for me. And even though I act crazy, I gotta thank the Lord that you made me. There are no words that can express how I feel. You never kept a secret, always stayed real. And I appreciate how you raised me and all the extra love that you gave me. I wish I could take the pain away. If you can make it through the night, there's a brighter day. Everything will be alright if you hold on. It's a struggle every day, gotta roll on. And there's no way I can pay you back, but my plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it. Don't you know we love you, sweet dear lady. Mama, place no one above you, sweet. You all appreciate it. That's Tupac Shakur, "Dear Mama," and that's Michael Darren McCauley's first choice. And that, when you present it in the context you presented it in, that's such an incredibly moving song, isn't it? People think of hip-hop as not being a kind of heart and soul, moving, poignant kind of thing, but of course it can be.
Yeah. Someone said to me recently that you're either like a beats person or a lyrics person, and I'm not sure how necessarily true that is, but I've definitely been a lyrics person. Like I'm always Googling freestyle poetry and like hip hop and lyrics, and it's something that's always kind of been a part of me. So that kind of meant a lot.
Do you remember your mum well?
It's kind of sad to say, not well enough. Like it's funny, people kind of give me memories about my mom that I kind of nearly pretend to remember. But the truth is, not well enough. It was funny. I had it in my head that my mom was sick for a long time. Like in my head, it was a year or two before she passed away when I was 12, but it actually wasn't. I was speaking to my sister, and it was actually 6 months. For some reason, like it felt like forever that I was going in and out of Blackrock Hospital. And I remember being collected from a sleepover at my friend's house, just saying, "Mom's not going to make it. We have to make make the last trip to Blackrock." So yeah.
Okay, what kind of memories do people give you of her?
Well, one thing, I think I'm very very like my mom, and I think people that know me would know that I'm quite active. I'm kind of always moving. I think we're leading on to it, but I kind of like to like host a party as well. Like that would be a thing of mine. Yeah. And I remember like my mom was kind of famous for all of those things. She was like, and I once did an article in a paper and I kind of said that I get my athletic ability from nowhere because I'm so great or whatever. Like, but then my auntie rang me the next day and she's like, "Sure, your mother was the captain of the sports team and sure, she was the best athlete in school." And I was like, "Sure, I didn't know that." Then I remember another time I was walking down the street in Sligo, somebody stopped me and said, "Geez, your mom never stopped moving. She was always walking up and down the hair salon. She used to do many things." And I was like, it was just like, there's like a lot of traits there that I think I definitely, if anyone in my family, I definitely take after my mom. Yeah.
That's nice, isn't it?
Yeah. And the football thing and people knowing a little bit about that is beautiful, because so often people do come up to me and stop me and say, "Geez, me and your mom did this." Somebody stopped me yesterday saying they were in school with my dad, and it's really nice to kind of hear those stories.
And your dad was a big ga man, right? But then I think after your mother died, you were sent to Blackrock, not a gas stronghold, to board.
No, as Beyond America, I think would have said, yeah. Blackrock.
The Philippines.
And the Philippines, yeah. So look, I went in the boarding school. It wasn't for me. That was a tough situation. And look, I don't know. I kind of railed on my dad until the final hours that it probably wasn't the right place to put me at the time. But it was what it was, yeah.
And was there basketball there?
Say basketball, yeah, I suppose, yeah. The lads, and it's funny because the lads in Blackrock, whenever I see them afterwards, they never, like the next time they saw me was kind of, I left in fourth year, they were like, when I was on the telly playing for the Dubs, and they're like, sure, you were the basketball player. they were like, we didn't know you played the guy. Like, so that was like, that was all I did back then. So, so it was a big part of it, yeah.
Yeah. So it took time for the guy to take, which you did it?
I always played it, but it just, it was a slow burn. It was a slow burn. I had my sights set of going to America, and the basketball was kind of, I thought was going to be my shining light. And then I was about 8 inches too small and just not good enough. But the football, I suppose, like, sports always been a big, big part of everything that I did. And I had kind of like Gaelic coaches who saw something in me all the way up that I never saw, like, not trying to make a big kind of rags to riches story of it, but it really didn't. Like, there was a girl called Sheila Clear, is my teacher, who was like sending me to trials for Dublin. Like, what are you doing, you mad thing? I was like, I was like, why would I be going there? And I went there in full basketball gear, and all the Dubs always say it, even the senior Dubs, Mossy Quinn always says it. I remember when you came to train, and everyone was just saying, look at the stadium, man. Shorts around my knees. So it was. We got there eventually. Yeah.
Yeah, you certainly did. So back to the music. Your mum hosted great parties, and so do you. And this leads us to your next song, which is "Chic." Everybody dance.
Yeah. Well, look, it's a classic. But I suppose where it came from was that when I sound like the angel of death here, but when my dad passed away, I was living with my dad then in the house, and my brother lives in Australia, my sister Joseph and my brother sister Margaret lived elsewhere in Dublin, so it was just me and my dad living together. And when he passed away, I was 23, and so I was just in the house by myself. It's a big, kind of big family house, so I invited in five of my friends to live with me. So I suppose the reality that goes with that is it turned into a little bit of a party house now and again. Now, I was still juggling a moderately successful inter-county career at the time. So I had to make do when I could. But I suppose that, look, I think every single person who's ever played for Dublin has been into that house. Single, half the fucking Dublin fans have been in there, half the streets have been in there. So it was always an open door policy, and there was a few, there's a few big ones out there, yeah. And it was just a fun time. Look, sometimes you look back and you miss those times in your 20s, whatever, be it in here or different countries, when you're all living together with your friends, they're special times. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is a big song in that era, was it?
And I think like I remember one time we put a DJ on the roof of the house, which was ridiculous in a suburban neighborhood. And I always remember the local priest, Father Brendan. He announced it from the church.
Called out from the altar.
Yeah, he called out from the altar and was like, congratulations to our parishioner, Michael Dara, on his success. I think we all know we had a good time last night.
Okay, so good times now with Chic, Everybody Dance. Okay, that was Chic, Everybody Dance, Michael Dara McCauley. I stupidly said there I met Niall Rogers, but Michael Dara McCauley had a way better story of meeting him in Zara and nearly going on stage with him. But look, I want to forge on. You see, this is interesting about the whole GA thing, and you being like, oh, why is the teacher sending me to these trials and stuff like that? So on one hand, you're portrayed as this really laid back guy, like, you know, these stories of, oh, we'd have to download a picture of the guy he was marking to show him who he was marking, and that, oh, he'd forget his boots and all that. And then on the other hand, I read this piece that Joe Brawley wrote about you, right? And he met you for a scone somewhere and a cup of coffee. But you said this thing to him: in the past, in a place like this, I would see a scone and feel a gun pointing at the back of my head. I'd want to go to a concert. The gun was there again. Or a long weekend away. The gun again. It was a constant pressure, a constant sacrifice. Will I eat it? Can I eat it? Can I have that pint? Is that what it's like?
Well, firstly, we all know we take everything that your body says with a bit of a pinch of salt. But everything Joe says is always rooted in truth. It kind of is we all play it because we love playing it. And I know there's that kind of juxtapositions of two me's like playing football, being relaxed. But the reality of it is like a lot of the lads now give it up for a summer, walked away, gone travelling. I went at it for 11 years and I went at it hard. And like I train like a lunatic and it's a big part of it. And like I think like maybe, and we talk about like, oh, the 70s team used to go for pints beforehand. And I actually drilled into that. That's actually lies as well. I think it's just the margins are so close now that like there's just always someone over your shoulders. Our team was so good at the time that you could just never feel relaxed at being like, oh, I could take it easy here. I could take a session off. I could go to this birthday and I'd still get you. Like you wouldn't, like your place would be gone. And I suppose like that's...
That is your life for 11 years, yeah?
I don't want to like make it like it was miserable or something for 11 years. It wasn't. But like when you're on and you can't half-arse it. You just can't. And training has to be such a huge part of that. And that is diet. That is lifestyle. It's not that kind of... Yeah, it's not that kind of... You just can't half do it, yeah?
Yeah. And then I think when you gave up and you retired from playing with your club last summer as well, a lot of guys talk about giving up and a loss of meaning in their life and that, you know, the best days are over and all that. I don't think it was like that for you, was it?
I kind of said it before. I nearly felt like I had like survivor's guilt when I came away from it because it is such a huge part. Of course it is. Every time I go into Croke Park, I rarely miss a match. Someone always says to me, "Do you miss it out there?" Of course I miss it out there. Like I would do anything to be down on the pitch when I'm watching it. But I suppose just what goes around it, like life is short and we had a great time out there and now I'm looking forward to having a great time outside of it. A lot of lads really, really struggle. I don't think that's any secret when they walk away from it. And I suppose like I was always kind of very, like maybe I was conscious, but I always like brought so many of my friends with me on the journey. So we had there was a gang of my friends that were just everywhere with me, every home and away game, and they were like just mainly for the party and for enjoying it, but they they had a great time, and like that was it. Like obviously I was on the journey.
So in the grand hip hop tradition, like you brought your entourage everywhere. entourage, the boys from the hood.
the mean streets of Rafarnham,
I believe yourself and Philly McMahon like to control the tunes in the Dublin dressing room, yeah.
There's always a war. Obviously, mine were much better. It goes without saying. But myself and Philly had a few sparring opportunities over the tunes. That makes the atmosphere there. Kind of like nearly some of the memories in the dressing rooms of the matches and every training session.
Is the song important? The music important in the dressing room? Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think so. Yeah. And the way we settled it was that Philly would take the green room in Croke Park and I would take the main room in Croke Park.
Okay.
And then the trainer was a whole different thing. I think it kind of sets the atmosphere. Yeah.
And why this song then, Van Morrison Days Like This?
Oh, well, I think it's been seen now. I think this footage has kind of captured it. I think it exists now of like when the Dublin team, after we're looking up to win those medals, that we go into the little green room on the side of Croke Park and like lads kind of get it in the shoulder to shoulder and play this song. And I played this, I'm not sure if it was the start of the kind of six in a row thing, but it was somewhere on the journey, and then it became an anthem that we had to play. And I completely forgot this actually, but when I retired from Dublin, the famous when you leave the WhatsApp group thing, I actually forgot that. I left the WhatsApp group by giving in a playlist of all my favourite Dublin tunes.
Yeah.
And this was like front and centre of it as well, because anyone that was on that era, like this song means a lot to them.
And is it about stopping to recognise the moment that these are the good times? Because often I guess you're just thinking you're relieved to have won again and you're looking at the next match, but it's to stop and go, yeah, let's remember.
I think it was Jim that said it afterwards, there was when we're in that room together, that room will never be brought together again. Somebody will leave. You feel we're going to be here forever and we'll be here next year. You just won't. Time moves on. That's the last time that team will kind of resurface like that. So it's always a beautiful moment.
Okay, Michael Darren McCauley's third choice, Van Morrison, Days Like This.
When it's not always raining, there'll be days like this. When there's no one complaining, there'll be days like this. Everything falls into place like the flick of a switch. Well, my mama told me there'll be days like this. When you don't need to worry, there'll be days like this. When no one's in a hurry, there'll be days like this. When you don't get betrayed by that old Judas kiss. Oh, my mama told me there'll be days like this.
Okay, that's Van Morrison, Days Like This, Michael Darren McCauley's third choice. So, you, as you mentioned, primary school teacher. You also trained as a yoga teacher along the way. I think that's how you met your girlfriend as well, through yoga, isn't it?
Yoga was is a big part of my journey, yeah. I suppose like when I was like 20, 14, 15, I had no interest in being a yoga teacher. I'd been kind of going through it since I was like 16 or 17. But then I just loved being in that space. It was just a different world from the like, from just the world that I probably inhibited through sport and through my kind of regular mates, and I just wanted to be around it more, and it ended up being one of the best things I ever did. So why? It's just a different world. It's just more relaxed. It's a counterbalance to my kind of all go lifestyle and nature in general. And I think it's just kind of needed. So yeah. Look, it's been a big part of my journey. We ended up like, yeah, and you're right, like. My girlfriend Sarah as we speak, she's over in India doing her advanced yoga training, so she's probably not listening to RT1, to be fair. Right. So she's sending me photos with like elephants and monkeys in the background and shalas and stuff, and I'm looking at Excel spreadsheets and in the rain.
And you want to be in India doing yoga?
Oh my god, yeah. So it's just I'll have to make up for it. So it's been a fun part of the journey. And I suppose, and the song we're picking is kind of like it's a Shavasana song. It's kind of relaxing, kind of meditation song. It's beautiful, but it always kind of like distinctly reminds me of we set up like a yoga teacher training course in town. But I used to work specifically with a group called the Sail Project, who were women who were going through different stages of addiction. We used to teach them yoga every Wednesday, and I always remember like my first time. And they're at, like they're like. As I said, various stages of addiction. But I remember like I was teaching the class, and it was an interesting bunch, to say the least. They were like, they're gas characters, like real inner city Dublin women. And I remember like we finally like kind of got to the Shavasana part at the end. It was about 14.
The Shavasana is
the meditation at the end. Yeah. And we're all laying down. There's like candles. It was all nice. And I was like, oh god, that was an interesting experience. And everyone was kind of meditating. I was like, geez, this is really nice. And then I remember one of the girls just shouted from the back row to the front row, "Oh, Mary, this is deadly, isn't it? It's very relaxing and all, isn't it?" It's like, those women are like they're special. They're so nice, and they were a joy to teach. And then we set up a teacher training program, and four of those girls went on to actually become yoga teachers. So yeah, it's been a big part of it, yeah.
Okay, so this is your fourth choice, and it's this is the song so that was playing when that story happened. This is The Gloaming and Sorrow, Sorrow.
Sorrow, sorrow, is Kevin Ingdig.
That's The Gloaming, Sorrow, Sorrow, and that's Michael Darren McCauley's fourth choice today. You did get to travel then, though, didn't you, eventually?
Yeah, myself and Sarah took off after the football, like nearly in within like weeks of the football finishing, and we managed to, we travelled the world, we went all over the Alps, hiking from cabin to cabin, and then we kind of interrailed all around Europe, and then we flew to the Himalayas, and we did the Annapurna circuit, and we went all around the Kumbh region, around Everest and stuff as well. So we had an amazing trip, yeah. And yeah, it was just
You kind of spiritual people?
I don't know about that now. Yeah. I think we both just enjoy traveling. It was something that I looked, the football kind of curtailed it a little bit, and yeah. For her as well, look, Sarah, I think it's probably well known, Sarah plays for Dublin as well for many years as well, so it was a kind of dedicated athlete, and has a couple of All-Irelands, but it's amazing experience it is. It does kind of tie you to Dublin for the kind of time when you're involved in it, so there was a bit of making up for last time. Yeah
have your gap year. So then you're very passionate about a lot of kind of what we might call social work and kind of community work that you do and stuff like that. You're also passionate about promoting organ donation.
Yeah. Well, it's a big part of my family, unfortunately. So I think my dad just missed out on an organ. There's a disease called lung fibrosis, which my dad has, which my brother and my sister has, which I have about a 50% chance of having as well, unfortunately. It's a terminal illness, and the kind of route out of it is a lung transplant, which my sister was lucky enough to get about 15 months ago now, which is fantastic. And Margaret is flying in now. She even came to watch me lose my basketball match last night. As I said, my dad just missed out on one. So it's hugely important that people have the conversation with their family about organ donation, and if they'd like to be a donor or not, because the rates are slowing at the moment as well. So we kind of need to kind of put an emphasis on it as well.
Okay, so people get the donor card.
The most important thing you can do, and I said on the Late Late Show before, previously, was have that conversation with your family. A card or no card, like, people need to know what your choices are.
Okay, and you've also worked as an ambassador for Concern, but you've just recently taken up a role with the Sanctuary Runners. Remind people who they are and what that's all about.
Yeah, so the Sanctuary Runners is a community integration project, and it's a solidarity through sport movement where we aim at bringing everyone in the community together through walking, jogging, or running, or even just volunteering. And what started by a Kerry man in Cork in 2018 in one group has now spanned to 44 groups in 23 counties all over Ireland, and with big plans afoot. And we suppose we specifically support people in direct provision around the country to come into the community through these groups. It's been a very special project, and I've been so privileged, even in the 6 months that I'm not even in the job, to get to know so many people who have come over here who I normally wouldn't have got the chance to get to know. And I suppose we swim in our circles, we're on our same kind of hamster wheels. And I suppose what this does is kind of break down those barriers and kind of help people to come together. It's an amazing initiative. We're working with 77 different nationalities across the island of Ireland at the moment. And for anyone who's kind of thinking about joining a local group or getting involved, often when you hear running, people just go, okay, well, that's not for me. And there's so many amazing stories, but of people who have no interest in running, and when they get involved, they come just eat cake for the first time, that's fine. Everyone has a cup of tea and a biscuit afterwards, and get to know your neighbours. I've said it before that, like, sometimes, like, people come over here and you just don't bump into some people in the pubs, because some people mightn't drink, and with all the goodwill in the world, some people from Zimbabwe mightn't go down to the local hurling club. And I suppose this is where we create deliberate spaces for people to come, and they're like exceptionally positive spaces. And Sanctuary Runners has been like a gateway for so many people into the community. And that's often what we are. Like, when people land over here, often with very little means, we are like that entry point for people into the community and into much bigger things.
Okay, fantastic. Lots of really nice text there. People really enjoyed that. I'll read you one, though, from a Mayo man who said, "I have to say, I always had great time for Michael Dara as a ball player. He now comes across as an equally likeable, thoughtful and good guy in an overall general sense." So even hurt Mayo people are are liking you today. So your last song, I think, kind of comes out of Sanctuary Runners' life a bit. There's a Thames and Love Me JJ.
Yeah, Thames. So she's a Nigerian artist, and I suppose when I remember one of my first Sanctuary Runners events, that there was like big speakers there, and there was actually, this song was actually like blasting through the radio and everyone was just having such a good time, and there was a lot better rhythmic dancers there than me, but it was just a real kind of big smiles, big joy, and whenever I always give people lifts like from all over the world. Like I had a bunch of Somalian lads in the car last week, and I was like, I always give them Spotify. I'm like, all right, give me the latest, give me what's hot in Somalia. I had an Algerian fella in the car, all right, give me some Algerian. Yesterday morning I had a Zimbabwe girl, I like the Zimbabwe tunes, but Thames is a Nigerian artist, and this is I had that, you know, that AI DJ on Spotify. I had that as I was coming into RTE today, and it was like, hey, we're going to hit you with some of your favourites. And Thames JJ came on and I was like, oh, very, very fitting.
Okay, listen, Michael Darren McCauley, an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. And I really enjoyed your song choices as well. So we'll finish up now on your final choice today. This is Thames and Love Me JJ. Thanks, Michael Darren.
So fresh, so clean. Love me in and out. I'm feeling lean. And I'll be down now. Anytime you call me, I'll be down, I'll be down. Because I love and I love and I love and I love you only. Because I need and I need and I need and I need you more. Yeah, you know I run and I run and I run and I run. Fly with you, fly in the sky in the night. Put me in your arms and your love and your light. I'm on your wave right now. I'm on your wave right now, yeah. I'm on your vibe now. You got me on your side now, yeah. I'm on your wave right now, yeah. If not you, then I don't wanna know. I don't want no story. Day and night is unconditional. Got me living softly.